Welcome to MP Access, the official podcast of Mortgage Point and the Five Star Institute. My name is Gina Galusha, and I'm coming at you live from Five Star Government Forum. Today, we have Wes Isley with us. Wes, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, we're so glad to have you. I have to say, I have a very fond respect for your team, and they have a deep respect for you. So I'm very excited for this conversation.
We're looking forward to it.
Good. So you have been in servicing for some time, and you've seen cycles come and go. What are you seeing right now that is making you think and strategize?
Well, I think it's very different than it was 10 years ago. I think every company out there is looking at the customer experience. And if you look 10 years ago, it was mostly about efficiency. So I think everybody's doing a good job, and the whole level of the customer experience and taking care of your customer is hit a new high. I think lending is difficult, and I think to be a lender now, you have to be good. And then on the third thing, I think servicing has finally hit the mark where it's well respected. You have to be a good servicer, or you have to be a good sub-servicer for your clients to survive. And the last thing, I think that you have compliant companies out there. After the financial crisis, that wasn't the case. But even with the change of the CFPB and everything else, nobody's letting their guard down. You need to be compliant, and you need to be good, and you need to have proper oversight. And I'm really kind of proud of our industry right now for achieving that.
Right. You said earlier that if to be a lender, you need to be a good one, and to be a servicer or sub-servicer, you need to be a good one. Will you define what you mean by good there?
Okay, so there's two different aspects of that. We talked about compliant and you know, following all the rules and regulations, and I think that is there. The other one is that I think you need to serve your customers, and I think we've came a long way of various methods about how to reach out, education, making it easy for customers to look up and see what's going on with their account, providing information, value of the home, their equity, right? So I think that is different than it was in the past.
So focusing on customer experience, have you been doing at Carrington, and what changes are you excited about coming that are focused on that client experience?
Well, you know, we love our servicer. We have a good servicer. So lending and then buying assets, we're an asset manager first. We want to retain those customers. So I think that from providing a good customer experience and making sure that we do a good job handling those customers is important if you want to retain that customer. And everybody's focus is to retain that customer.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at retention, what are the data points that you kind of focus on?
Well, we look very analytical company since we're an asset manager first. So everything of triggers of our own analytics, you know, we run our own models that kind of tell us when people might be willing to look, purchase homes, you know, refinance, and you know, those are key. Everybody's kind of focused on that of their, you know, trying to find the right time to reach out. Or even the challenging insurance market with people, you know, being able to get insurance or the rising cost. So we have an insurance company, and we go through one of our brokers that analyzes that, so when on renewal time we're reaching out and see if we can save that customer money. It's very important with FHA or government loans. I think with, you know, every penny counts, and we've been able to save our customers money with that. So that's one thing we're doing different, and we see other servicers trying to do the same thing now.
Mm-hmm. You, Carrington has a wide array of kinds of, how do I say this, services in the market. You have, you know, the asset management, and you have the insurance arm, and you also have the villa as well. What is the kind of cohesive connection between those and how they support your customers?
Yeah, that's a good question. So our owner and our current CEO is, we've been focused on a vertically integrated residential mortgage company. So we like to control the experience. By controlling the experience, you know, through lending, servicer, title, brokerage, insurance company, and other companies. We have 11 companies. It's all vertically integrated.
You have almost every section of the vertical, right?
Yes. You know, we like to control the experience and from that, we take some of our companies and have a lot of third-party clients, too. So we actually service for other business partners, and we look at them as business partners.
That makes sense. And so it's kind of, I'm going to restate this, it's the full experience from Alpha to Omega, ultimately, right, that you have a community of companies that can help care for that client and keep them in-house.
Yes.
Make sure that throughout the process, because if you think about when you want to go sell or you want to go buy, if you don't have the right agent, then it's not going to go well, right? So that's the thinking.
Yeah, you know, we like having our brokerage or our realtor. Mm-hmm. You know, it gives us a lot of insight of what's going on into the market, and it's very regionalized, market by market.
Absolutely.
And just having that when somebody wants to buy a home, sell a home, and then you have the lending arm and everything else, we can create the whole experience.
Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about the structural strategy of Carrington. Let's talk about the cultural strategy. So with your leaders, they're very engaged in the industry. You know, we can always count on them to be speakers or positive voices for constructive criticism and those kinds of things. How does that culture emanate from the top down?
Well, I think you need to be involved as a company and our executives to work with our regulators for good policies. And, you know, staying involved with the National MBA, Mortgage Action Alliance, very important to be involved in that when issues come up, to have a voice. The state associations, so I was chairman of the California Mortgage Bankers Association, active for 10 years. In fact, I finally term off in May. But you need to be involved. You know, there's issues that come up, and you need to be involved, and you need to work with the other companies out there. Servicers as a whole work together. We share ideas. We want a good industry. We can't have any bad characters out there. And most servicers are very active in the National MBA and the state associations. And on top of that, there's the what I call NMSA, National Mortgage Servicing Association. We had our meeting yesterday with the top 40 servicers. And so we work together and talk and, you know, and kind of work together with the regulators to help formulate good common sense policy that help out customers and the industry and protect the industry.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of policy and regulations and working together with them and collaborating on that, what are the issues of the day or the challenges of the day that you see that you are currently collaborating on?
Well, number one, we just had the changes come from FHA, HUD on the rules. So everybody's, you know, implemented those and following those. Now VA is coming out with the partial claim and I mean, luckily they put that on the drafting table. They had many responses. So I think we're all waiting to see what those rules are. Since we gave input, we're continually giving input as a group on that. You know, servicers just want one thing. We want clear rules that we know how to follow and allow us time to get our systems that we, you know, and the oversight in there to be compliant. So I think the biggest thing right now is we're waiting for BA to come out with what they have and if they want any more input.
And when you are thinking through the input and how you're going to implement in-house and those kinds of things, what's the channel of discussion that you have with VA, HUD, et cetera? And how do you find those relationships that you've built over the years a resource for those conversations?
I think it's better, and we've kind of learned, you know, individual companies try to have the conversation. But it's not as meaningful unless you work as a group, like with NMSA, the MBA, or services as a whole coming together. And, you know, talking with the regulators of what's important, what's best for the customer. That's the impact. I don't think you can, I don't care how big you are. I think you need to work together. And it's more powerful if we work together as a whole. And the same in lending. I'm talking about servicing a lot, but the same in lending on policies. Right. It's better if we come together as an industry for that influence.
Good. Shifting to the market and what's coming up, with all of the insights you have across the industry through your vertical, what are you seeing are areas of opportunity that are coming and areas of challenge?
Well, let's talk about opportunities first. It's the opportunity and challenge probably together, efficiency. AI is moving at a rapid pace.
Right.
And I think you need to be engaged. You need to be careful. You need to be thoughtful. But you need to keep up with the changes that is happening almost on a daily basis. And the same with robotics, OCR. It just helps from compliance and efficiency and speed and service. So it is changing faster than I've ever seen it. And I think you can't wait and you can't rest. You need to be continually on top of that, see what vendors are doing out there, what others are doing, and try to you need to be ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm. And not afraid of the curve?
I don't think you can be afraid of the curve, because otherwise you're going to be left behind.
Right. Cautious of the curve?
Cautious. You need to be cautious with AI, and I think we are. Us as Carrington as a company, mm-hmm. Very methodical the way we do things and approach things. And I think others are following that too.
With the changes that we're seeing in the market and in regulation, what would you say are the ways that a organization really can prepare themselves for what's coming and do it well?
Well, I think you're seeing changes in the market. Before, you had lenders standalone, and we had servicers and sub-servicers. But now you're seeing people combine. If you look at the Two Harbors deal where you had three bidders out, I think from a customer perspective, you see people wanting to have that combination of lending servicers to control the environment. I mean, that was pretty interesting transactions. And that's not the last one. So I think for the next 12 to 24 months, you're actually going to see that in the marketplace of people trying to control by having both a servicer and a lender, plus the other services. You see other companies doing that and trying to be more like Carrington. We value the experience and have those broad range of companies, and other people are looking the same way.
Right. At Carrington, you've seen some good growth in terms of those acquisitions and those, you know, company collaborations as well. When you're thinking through the future, what advice would you give, or what strategies do you put in place when you're thinking about how to grow, but how to grow without taking on too much risk, and strategically rather than for growth's sake?
Okay, so that's a good question too. So volume for volume's sake doesn't work at all. And I think you need to be, to manage risk, the way we look at it at Carrington, we're very proud of our servicer, and we service govy loans and some of the lower FICO govy loans and do it well, and non-QM loans besides. We also do GSE and the rest. But, you know, myself and the way Carrington thinks is that we can manage risk better by having our own servicer. It's kind of the crown jewel of Carrington, because it controls the customer experience. And you get to, you're able to manage risk since it is your servicer. So I don't think myself, I would be doing the govy loans and non-QM loans without controlling the servicing. So back to our thing, why are you seeing mergers and acquisitions? Because I think people are trying to be able to manage that risk. Mm-hmm. So that's how we think at Carrington.
Okay. And when you think of growth, how do you position your goals so that they are that strategic and not volume for volume, but also, you know, ambitious?
I think every market, the way we look at it is that every market cycle has opportunities. And I think you need to look ahead to adopt your strategies. And I'll give you one example for our title company, Vola Title, which we're very proud of. It was strong originations title at first. We saw interest rates going up. That's going to change. Volumes are going to go down. 65% of our revenue at the title company is default title. 6 or 7 years ago, we expanded to commercial title, which is the only thing we do, is commercial title. But that's a strong revenue. So we're not a one-stop title company shop. It's origination, it's default, and it's commercial. So I think that's one example of trying to look ahead. If you look as an investor and buying assets, of what's happening, what's out there, what can we manage, and what do we know out there, and then having strong relationships with, you know, inside our industry and community to be able to help people out and purchase those assets and be a good partner. I mean, we look at, you know, the people that we buy assets from as business partners. You know, so we want continued flow. We want it to be a good experience. So I think, you know, being a good, strong company with a good reputation of doing things right helps us. I mean, it helps with your regulators too, because you can have communication with them. You can talk to them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's very important.
How long did it take you to create that trust within the industry?
You know, that's that was a big challenge for us when we were smaller. And we, with some of the big banks, we were buying the govy loans of how much can we take on and manage. And it's a lot of trust. I mean, for every small deal and getting larger deals, how can you do it? At first, and this goes back 10 years ago, you know, the banks, and they still are concerned, even though they're selling the asset, it's still associated with them. So they want to make sure that Carrington, as a buyer of the asset, was also a good servicer. So they would come in for a week, and they still do, of audits. And, you know, that, I think that follow-up and concern from them and they saw how we handled the customers and how we helped those customers out, some of those delinquent customers, and turned them into performing loans. And we're very proud of that. We are good at working with customers and trying to find solutions. So that was, once you gain that trust and the reputation of doing things right, and handling those customers, it gets easier.
I think something you said earlier about the title, you know, and not getting pigeonholed in origination, but using those transferable capabilities to those other areas, right? It is similar to what you just said about how to take folks from being, you know, in distress to current. It's that kind of, I'm not going to say creative thinking or necessarily nimble, but maybe the two combined, where you allow your folks to be creative in their solutions. Is that fair?
It is. And one thing back, and we're talking about the old days of how do you gain trust with the people you're buying from, is we would share what happened, you know. NPLs or non-performing loans, and this goes back when it was a bigger market, we would actually show the banks, this is what we did. Here are loans that were severely delinquent, and here are the results where we got these back performing. I think our people that work for Carrington were very proud of that, and I am. I'm proud of them for the results and work they did, but that's how we earn trust, of just like sharing, you know, what we did to get that loan performing and helping out those customers.
Right. When you're looking at the market, what are the signals that you're looking for to say what's coming in the next 6 to 12 months?
Well, everybody's concerned about interest rates. And, you know, everybody kind of watches what's going on with the 10-year, what's going on with the spread, and what's going to happen. But honestly, I think our current rate environment, with slight changes, because it's going to go down a little bit, there's not going to be big changes in that. I think from a risk perspective, that, you know, we continually monitor and look at early stage delinquency of what trends are going on. And, you know, the good thing is credit quality is good. You know, the GSEs credit quality is remain relatively flat. FHA has some challenges, and they had the recent changes, so you're going to have a bump on that. But, I mean, we look for what's going on. And you can't look nationally. You got to look, you know, regionally, of what challenges are out there. And there's going to be surprises, national disasters, and we've had those. And we hit, you know, there's things that pop up. And I think that, as a servicer, I'm talking about servicing again, we have been able to adapt, react, and have plans to reach out to those customers, where, you know, we're ready for it. You got to plan for the unplanned event. So
would you say, you know, with all of the industry consolidation that's happening right now, when there's risk, if you have lender servicer combination, would you say that risk is greater or that risk is mitigated?
Mitigated.
How so?
I think if you have both, your assets, you're servicing the assets, you're seeing everything going on. You're not relying upon servicing oversight, because you have servicing oversight, but it's your servicer.
Right.
So I think that's very, very different on that. I mean, there's good sub-servicers out there, very good. And I think that if you look at a whole and said that, if you would have asked me or anybody else 10 years ago how big some of the non-bank servicers would become, we'd all be wrong. Now you see large non-bank servicers that are good servicers. And just the size of these servicing books just says how far we've came from the technology, process, efficiencies to handle those larger volumes. So pretty impressed the way the industry is progressed since the financial crisis.
Right, right. Absolutely. It's been a collaborative effort in a lot of ways, which is very cool.
Yes. You know, we all work together, and that's something, you know, different. You know, before the financial crisis, nobody talked to anybody else. Nobody, you know, nobody worked together to help the industry. You know, after that debacle, I think everybody realized that, you know, we need a strong industry. There can be no bad players. We all need to work together for good policies and handle our customers.
What would you say to the people whose response to that kind of collaboration is, I'm not going to teach my competitor how I do things and how I succeed?
You know, I think it's a little, you know, from the lending side, there's a little bit of this that I'm not going to tell my secret sauce. From the servicing side, it's a little bit different of we need to take care of the customer. We need good roles. We need good technology. And if you looked at the past of 15 years ago, there, you know, servicing wasn't up to the level it should have been. And focus on technology on the servicing side was not there. Now you look at the technology, and it's a very competitive space. And the level of technology is risen to a higher level than I thought it would become. So I think that's a huge change.
Mm-hmm. I have heard from some folks sometimes they say servicing is antiquated. Would you say that's no longer the case? Would you say we still have some room to go?
Okay, it used to be antiquated. And this goes back 10 plus years ago, and it was. And the focus was not there. And the level of caliber of servicing executive wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the biggest change that has happened. You know, at one time, the very good people would always be on the lending side. And there was always good people in servicing. But now it's at a complete higher level. You have true professionals, and it's very competitive of retaining those professionals and keeping those people that are at an extremely high level. Mm-hmm. And the whole level of servicing itself from a people perspective has risen 4 to 5 times, in my opinion.
Would you say that is simply a result of people saying servicing has to be better, we have to hire better, or how did that come about?
Oh, I think the focus, if you look at, first thing is servicers make money, you know, we handle the customers, but it's a source of revenue to, you know, counter-cycle lending. So having both, it kind of helps during these ups and down cycles of being able to get through, be profitable, be a good company. And I think that from that perspective, you need good people. It's all about people.
Right.
And that's where I think you saw the shift of people hiring and retaining. You know, I started as lender focused. And I've kind of tilted to the servicing side over the last 10 or 15 years, but most people have wore multiple hats.
Right.
And I think wearing those multiple hats and be able to change as the market changes, it gives you a better perspective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you have them both in-house, you can kind of learn from each other too, right?
It's all connected. And that's, you know, we think as an asset manager on top, but it's like kind of a, with all of our companies, it's a circle around there where how we can take care of that customer. And you need that flow of information going around that circle to be able to accomplish that. Mm-hmm. And that's why we started these companies and then grew these companies and then started doing third-party business.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. It does. Perfect. Okay. Looking ahead, what gives you confidence in the industry beyond kind of what we've already discussed and the growth and the change and the technology and the, you know, hiring great people, those kinds of things? What else is giving you confidence in this industry and what's coming?
Okay. Number one, credit quality has never been this high. That I think every lender out there, you know, the ability to repay, which wasn't there 15 years ago with the stated income, people make good loans. There's enough technology out there where you are compliant. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think from a credit quality perspective, I think from a compliance perspective, audit compliance, audit risk perspective, I think from both sides, from the lending side and the servicing side, mm-hmm. we've never had it that high. So I think you're seeing that with the lower levels of delinquency.
Right. Do you have any concerns about the rise in HELOCs and second mortgages and those kinds of things right now, or do you think those are minimal?
Okay, so looking back at history, mm-hmm. if you look at before the last financial crisis, the big one, people were just using their house and their equity as like an ATM.
Right.
Because the view that at that time is appreciation will never stop.
Yes.
And I think from an education perspective or a customer perspective, you're not seeing that. Okay, so HELOCs are popular, right? But I think from back to the credit quality, I think it's a higher credit quality than it was before. From an LTV perspective, mm-hmm. I think it's more reasonable than it was before. So even though the seconds, closing in seconds and the HELOCs are popular, I don't think it, I think it's reasonable.
Okay.
Where it wasn't.
Before.
Yeah.
And the current debt-to-income ratio, you think that?
You know, the big concern out there that is taxes and insurance.
Yes.
And you see, and we worry about that. I guess that's one of those risks that, you know, we're trying to look at. Mm-hmm. So we're just rolling something out right now as a service to our customers if they want to appeal their tax assessment.
Yes.
And trying to get, you know, information out to those people on that. And then we already talked about, you know, how we're offering insurance products mm-hmm. through our, you know, our brokers of that, of trying to help people with that. So that's the biggest concern out there. If you see the regional tax increases and insurance mm-hmm. challenges or the FAIR plans out there, you know, I think California is finally getting close to being floating bonds to solve the solvency of the FAIR plan
right.
itself.
Right. Okay. That was slightly unfair of me to ask, but I just wanted to kind of dig into that credit quality a little bit. So what else? You said there's one, credit quality is one. What's two?
Okay. So we talked about credit quality. We talked about compliance, mm-hmm. Equity. If you look at the pre-2022 vintages, people have equity. And that's generational wealth to help out their kids as it goes along. I don't think we've seen this stability and equity where, okay, so appreciation is slowed, but it's still positive. And there's going to be regional ups and downs, but for the most part, if you look at the vintages, the, you know, the pre-2022 vintages, people have strong equity. And that's safety. that's safety for them. So I think that's a big positive change.
Perfect. Word on the street is that this year is your swan song. So tell us about what in your legacy through your work in this industry you're most proud of, but also what are you hoping to accomplish in the coming year?
Well, number one, I think I said it earlier, it's all about people. In D.C. this week with all the industry people, it's good. I see people that I've mentored and helped within Carrington, outside of Carrington. And I'm probably more proud of seeing people succeed. And I think as a good executive in this business, you need to look out for people and help people out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a change from the past too. So, I mean, part of the California Mortgage Bankers or MBA, you know, we actually mentor outside of our company. Mm-hmm. And I have close relationships. And there's people that I've mentored and it was supposed to be a 6-month. And there's people that I still talk to every 2 weeks. And it's more personal. It's some personal, but it's, you know, reflective. But, you know, I don't think you can succeed in this business without caring for people. So I guess I'm most proud of that.
That's a great legacy. Mm. And in terms of what you're looking to accomplish?
I think that, for one thing, I'm proud of what Carrington's become. So from a reputational of doing the right thing, and that's how we kind of run the company. So I'm proud of the level of where we are, what is still possible. So I think that our CEO is making some very smart moves in the marketplace to position ourselves for the next level. For 17 years with Carrington, I want Carrington to continue to grow and do well for all the people that I've worked with. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy to see how where we are and where we will be. So I'm excited about it.
Good. Well, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insights and your wisdom. We're grateful.
Well, thank you. Thanks for your time.
You're very welcome. And thank you for joining us and spending time with us in spirit in DC. We will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to MP Access. Stay up to date with daily mortgage news, featured stories, and our latest episodes of the podcast at themortgagepoint.com. Don't miss out. We'll see you next week.